Okay, we're going to call the Senate Education Committee meeting to order. It's a little bit after 8 o'clock. This morning is March 16th, and with us is my co-chairman to my right here, Senator Thomas, and then also Senator French and Senator Stevens. Senator Davis will be here shortly. So we do have just about the whole committee here, so we'll go ahead and get started. Today we are going to have a presentation. We're very fortunate to have a lot of guests with us today to talk about the Alaska fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, the groups we'll be talking about, alcohol spectrum disorders, and the group that's going to be making the presentation is the Alaska Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorders Partnership. As I mentioned, there's several folks here, and we're going to be hearing from several of them. I think the plan is to each one is going to speak for about 5 minutes, and if we could just kind of hold on to the questions until everyone's finished so that we can hear from each one of the panelists, and then we'll have questions. Also want to remind the committee that they are having a lunch, I believe, at 12 o'clock at the Butrovich Room. Okay. So if we have additional questions, we can see them all again at lunch. I want to welcome Senator Davis is here. Okay, so again, that lunch is at Butrovich, 12 to 1. And with that, let's see, the panelists today are going to be, or the presenters, Cindy Anderson, who is the Director of Special Education with the Anchorage School District, and Deb Evanson, who is a FASD Education Consultant, and Monica Lindberg, an FASD specialist from the Lower Kuskokwim School District. And let's see, the other panelists I'll let Ms. Henderson introduce them, but Mary Andrews, Terrell Andrews, Jean Gerhardt Cyrus, Ivory Gerhardt Cyrus, and Mindy Kaysen. So why don't we, at this point in time, I'll turn this over to you, Ms. Anderson, if you want to kind of walk us through your presentation today and what we might expect from the other panelists. So, good morning. Welcome to Juneau.
Thank you. And for the record, I'm Cindy Anderson, Director of Special Education for the Anchorage School District. And Senator Meyer and committee members, I want to thank you for this opportunity to present to you some stories and some information about FASD. And with that, we'll go ahead and get started. First of all, FASD is a range of disabilities caused when a developing fetus is exposed to alcohol. It is preventable. FASD is a lifelong disability, and it can manifest in very many ways, with learning disabilities, memory problems, poor judgment, impulsivity, attention deficit. There can be physical issues, heart and kidney issues, cognitive impairments, and severe emotional disturbance. And Alaska has the highest per capita rate of FASD in the United States. And with that, I'd just like to give a couple of parents the opportunity to give their stories. And I'd like to introduce Mary Andrews, who is a mother of a child with FASD, Terrell. And if Mary would come up.
You know, I also failed to mention we have the Commissioner of Education here, Commissioner Hanley. Thank you for joining us this morning. Yes, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to speak. For your record, my name is Mary Andrews, and I'm here with my son, Terrell. Terrell is 13 years old, and he is diagnosed with neurobehavioral disorder. But I knew all along that he would have problems of some kind due to prenatal exposure. Today I am here to share his story and ask for your support regarding FASD. When Terrell was born, my first horrifying thought was he might be deformed or fingers and toes missing, but he wasn't. And as an infant, he constantly cried and was very jittery. By age 3, he wasn't communicating much. He ended up getting frustrated and cry mostly because we couldn't understand him. His brothers and sisters thought he doesn't listen. Terrell couldn't explain himself and would end up breaking or took apart little things such as toys or bracelets. I knew something was wrong by the way he was progressing at school. He was behind in many ways. By the fourth and fifth grades, he wasn't bringing homework. He wasn't bringing any homework home. I started attending FAS meetings and camps with other parents to learn more about my son's disability and behavior. I learned that he wasn't connecting with how I was trying to help, and it was very complicating because he had his own way of learning. And he couldn't explain that to me. The trainings helped me to understand and that it's challenging every day because every day is a different day. With all the support I get from other parents, the school, and the medication he's on, Terrell is doing much better. He still doesn't communicate the way I wish he could, but at least I have the knowledge of how to help him in his everyday challenges with the early intervention. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for your presentation.
And now I'd like to introduce Monica Charles-Leinberger, FASD specialist from Bethel, and she's going to tell you about what she does.
Good morning. Good morning, and Huaka, thank you for having us this morning. For the record, my name is Monica Charles-Leinberger, and my Yupik name is Nautstock, and I'm from Bethel. As you heard from the previous speaker, Mary Andrews, I'm going to give you a little bit of the perspective from a teacher's standpoint. I am the FASD Behavior Specialist for our district in Bethel, the Lower Kuskokwim District, and we're pretty fortunate because not all districts in Alaska are able to have a special education teacher to work with this population that are diagnosed with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And while I was in the classroom, because of the training that I've been able to acquire, I've been able to learn that every child is unique in their abilities to communicate, the way that they learn reading, writing, and math, and the way that they behave is a lot different than the kids of their same age. And it doesn't matter what grade they are, kindergarten through 12th grade. And what I'm able to learn is that how the prenatal exposure to alcohol affects everybody on a different level, and it's lifelong. It's not going to go away. No medication or surgery will correct it completely. So what we have to do in the classroom is to change the educational environment around that child to give them success in the classroom, rather than having the child's expectations the same as their peers and expecting them to change to meet the needs for our standards. Just to give you a little insight on how different their brains could work and that it's different for each child. You all came in this morning. Some of us were up very early for whatever reason. You all came in and you have your agenda for the day. I'm sure you're seeing lots of different people, lots of different faces, many names, many things to remember. Committee meetings, probably thinking about what you're going to have for dinner or if you have plans for dinner. You're sitting here listening to our stories and from what districts we're coming from and the different backgrounds we have, and you're able to multitask. Well, in the classroom, students like Terrell aren't able to do that. The easiest thing for them, the best way for them to learn is to do one thing at a time. So I'm sitting here explaining to you what's going on, but in my head I have maybe 20 other things going on. And when Terrell was in the classroom, just to give one example, when I had students come up and ask for help during unstructured time, I would have them come to my table and line up. And I had about 7 kids lined up with me one time, and 12 was next. And they started, as third graders do, in line. They start poking each other, being off task. And Terrell was standing next to me, and his hands started to tremor. And I could tell something was going on, but he couldn't tell me with words. And so I said, "What's going on, Terrell?" And he said, "It's too much." And that is excellent. That is what we want our children who are prenatally exposed to alcohol to be able to communicate, rather than throwing a book or flipping a table or screaming out loud or running and leaving the area. He was able to tell me with words, "It's too much," and also a physical gesture. So I understood that there was too much stimulation for him. So in, rather than pointing out the inappropriate behavior or his concern, I just backed up the rest of the class and said, "Hey, everybody, you know, there's too much going on right now for me. I only want 5 people in line, and I want you to have a lot of elbow room." So I was able to make that accommodation for Terrell. And that is what a lot of our students need who are prenatally exposed to alcohol. We need to change the environment around them to give them success in the classroom. And I'm fortunate enough to have our district recognize that. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
And next we have Mindy Kaysen. She's a student at UAA, and she's going to tell her own personal story.
Morning, Mindy.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Mindy Kaysen, and I am prenatally exposed to alcohol. My story starts in elementary school when I was diagnosed with learning disabilities. And I've always been known as eccentric or different. And I knew early on in my life that there was something going on other than learning disabilities. I was seen in my young life as defiant or lazy, or I had lack of drive, which was not the case. I really wanted to please my teachers and my coaches. Moving on to high school, I decided not to receive special education services because it was very humbling to be pulled out of my classroom and put into another classroom, and my peers were asking me what was going on, and it would just kind of singled me out, and so I decided not to pursue special education in high school. Moving into college, I had a hard time passing my high school qualifying exam, and I was offered an athletic scholarship, and I had to score a minimum score on the SATs in order to accept my scholarship. I had to take the SATs probably about 8 times to get the score that I needed in order to go to college. I played volleyball for 2 years at the university, and I realized that I couldn't do it anymore. I just didn't have the capacity to continue with my education. At that point, I took a break, and I started working in prevention and intervention with Volunteers of America, where I was introduced to FASD. I went into a training called FASD 101, and I had to excuse myself because almost every bullet point that was hit spoke to me personally. So I had to leave the meeting, and at that time I realized what was going on with me. I knew my mom had substance abuse issues, so it just kind of connected the dots for me. At that time I was 21 years old, so I didn't know until I was 21 that I had exposure. In that 21 years, I damaged relationships, I made really poor decisions, I was very impulsive. I didn't follow directions well because I didn't understand how to follow the directions. I returned to school in spring of 2009, and I graduate May 1st with my bachelor's degree. And I have the opportunity to apply for my master's degree, which I will be in April 1st is when my application is due. And I'm applying to the School of Psychology at UAA. And basically, I want to share with you the importance of early intervention. If I would have had more screening when I was screened for learning disabilities, perhaps this would have been caught. Perhaps my processing differences would have been caught early on, and I would have had support so that I didn't have to struggle for 21 years in order to get my life in order. And, you know, the opportunity would have provided me with the coping skills that I had to develop on my own, which took many years and a lot of people asking me questions like, do you think that's a good choice, and what would be the outcome? Because I couldn't think that far ahead. All I saw was, I needed this, so I'm going to go get it. So thank you for listening to my story and giving me the opportunity to speak to you.
Well, thank you for your testimony, and it's good to see you again. I think you were here with the Volunteers of America, or what group?
The Youth Summit.
Youth Summit.
Yeah, I was here with the Youth Summit a couple of weeks ago.
Great. That's good. Thank you. Congratulations on your bachelor's degree.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
And next we'll have Jean Gerhardt Cyrus, and she is a mother of children with FASD. And her daughter Ivory's here also.
She's charging her DSI.
Morning.
Thank you for having me. And for the record, my name is Jean Gerhardt Cyrus, and my husband and I are parents of multiple children with prenatal exposure to alcohol. I ask that my daughter be removed during my testimony. I'd like to contrast for you the difference between supported success and independent failure for both students and teachers. My daughter's primary education was one of building frustration and diminishing communication, both her ability to communicate and the communication with the school breaking down, and a lot of anger resulting. Her ability to cope decreased, and her removal from school increased. Upon removal from school in a small village, you're also removed from parties, birthday parties. You don't get invited. You can't attend the Boys and Girls Club if you're on the gym list, if it's held at school. Many, many nights she cried herself to sleep. They don't know what it's like not to have any friends. As she went into survival mode, because she didn't have any other resources, she couldn't communicate what her needs were, people weren't getting it, there were restraints, multiple frequent restraints, to the point where we pulled her out of school at one time, and what resulted basically was isolation, not education. I am happy to report that when we have supported success, we have a whole world of difference. My daughter does have a diagnosis now and is has a special ed classification of other health impaired. I really believe we need to address FASD in our special ed classifications like we do for autism. Now we have increased communication. We have accommodations which, when she tried to put them in place, were not allowed but were actually punished. And we have people who are trained who want those accommodations in place. We have constant communication, tracking, and tweaking of her program. We did then, and we do now, make frequent visits to the school. We get phone calls frequently. She now is involved in sports, cross-country running, wrestling, basketball, and we need to train our teachers, and we need to support our teachers. I came up with this Alaskan analogy, I guess, like sending someone to work in the oil field with cooking utensils. It doesn't work. We need to have the right tools for people. And it's not just educational success we're talking about. It is lifelong success, because if our kids are not successful and don't remain in the educational system, and so many of ours do not, it does not bode well for later life. I have a 17-year-old who has no high school credits. I have a 23-year-old who is just now getting the kinds of support he needs. It's too late. And it's not too late. It's never too late. But early intervention, as Mindy said, would have been so helpful. I'd like to leave you with three R's I came up with since we were talking about education. For my daughter, Unfortunately, her first three R's were removal, restraint, fortunately, resiliency. There was no place she wanted to be more than in school. And we did not know why she got up every morning ready to go back to school again. Now we know. And now her three R's are rights, respect, and honor roll. And that's the difference that having training and supports in place for our teachers and our students can make. And it's not just education. It's life for family, community, and for our state. Thank you very much for this opportunity. We very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I want to just read a statement that my daughter wrote, which...
Sure.
I don't know. Do you want to... Ivory? I would just want to read... Do you want to read this that you wrote?
You could.
Okay. She said, hello, my name is Ivory Domenica Gerhardt Cyrus. And she said, I never had a challenge before, but my teachers are very nice to me. And when I read this, I brought tears to my eyes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Jean is absolutely correct. The types of services that we provide students provides the success. And so what I'm going to explain to you is what Anchorage School District is currently doing to support students with FASD. We hired, using ARRA funds, a consultant, and I call her an expert because she really is. Her name is Deb Evenson, and she spent 80 days the first year and 80 days the second year in our school district, working in our schools, providing training and support for teachers and staff members. Anytime we ask her to do a training, she's there. Anytime we ask her to go to a school and support a classroom or a student, she's there. And it has been absolutely phenomenal, our ability to support our students. As part of her training, she goes in and doesn't just do the talking head training. She actually does demonstration teaching. She does mentorships. And what that allows is our teachers to practice the skills they learn in the talking head training. Best way for a teacher to learn, best way for a student to learn. And so we've had that benefit of having her. We probably won't have that full benefit next year with ARRA funds going away, but we're going to do everything we can to continue as much support as possible. The other thing she's done, and along with some of the other specialists in FASD, is to we've done ASD tube training, which is actually putting them on. We take a camera, we film their trainings, and they are available for teachers at any time that they would like to access those trainings. Those are wonderful. They don't have the demonstration trainings, but they do allow teachers to learn information, accommodations, and modifications that they can use to support their students. One of the other things I think is absolutely critical that ASD has done is to assure that within their curriculum, in Great Body Shop, in their health classes, in consumer science classes, that there is an emphasis on teaching students about FASD, about alcohol consumption during pregnancy, and we're hoping that assists students in making better decisions as they move on into adulthood and parenthood. We also have a Step Center library that we have spent quite a bit of funds on to increase our resources. Parents, students, teachers, community members can come in and check those out. And our library size has increased, and our numbers of people checking materials out has increased substantially as well. There is a need to continue that level of support and build capacity with our district. We know we've hit the tip of the iceberg, and we want to continue to provide those services because what we know, it brings success for students. One other thing we've done is started training individual schools for inclusive practices. We believe fully that students should be included with general education peers. And with the right supports in academics, as well as behavior, all kids can be successful in a general classroom. As we increase the skill level of our staff, we will be able to support students with FASD. We are building the skills to support all students when we do this. Things that we do for students with FASD work for students with general education, students with autism, students who have behavioral issues. It's just good teaching practice what we're doing now. Also, the ability to differentiate instruction and provide accommodations to build success is critical to increasing test scores, meeting AYP, and teaching skills for success in life. And the last speaker, if she's online, is Deb Evenson. and I'd like to give her an opportunity to talk about what she does not only for Anchorage but for the state.
Great. Thank you, Cindy, and thank you for the kind words. It's an honor to be able to talk to you. I wish I was there in person, but thank you for letting me speak. This is Deb Evenson, and I've had the opportunity for the last 2 years to be involved in the Anchorage School District's, like I call it, Great FASD Adventure, where the school district has bravely, as our, you know, Alaska motto is, North to the Future, been willing to step out ahead and look at developing the capacity to deal with individuals on the spectrum of the fetal alcohol spectrum disorders in every grade level and every program. That's a huge goal. And I think we've made some giant steps towards that goal. But what we have learned is to increase the capacity to deal with fetal alcohol, we've learned that, first of all, everyone needs to understand it. Most of our students with FASD are not in special ed at this time. So this is an issue every single person in the district needs to understand. The other thing is that we know the field of FAS. FAS was discovered in 1973, and there's been so much research, and we know the techniques to help an individual with this disability make it to success in adult life. We know what they need. But our systems don't know it. You know, Anchorage School District, when I first came in, like many school districts throughout the state, and I've worked in many of them, there's a good hardworking teacher here and a hardworking teacher there, an amazing principal here, and they're working themselves, you know, to death, working, reinventing the wheel time after time after time to help a particular student with FASD, because our system, our education system, doesn't understand FASD. So what we need next is we need for people within the system to be able to figure out how to tweak the system from the inside so that we can help people step by step, first grade, second grade, third grade, make it through to success in adult life. To do that, we need to have someone in every school district who's able to be kind of a leader, the person that can help this happen. And if there's any way for the legislature to be able to help there be a person in every school district who could be the FASD expert, we could change the system of Alaska. And we could improve our outcomes, we could keep incredible data, and you know, we could lead the nation, the systems for the nation. In Alaska, we have the ability to take the next step forward. We have the ability to teach our systems how to work with people with this disability. I think we'd save a lot of money. We'd have improved outcomes, and it'd be a great adventure. So I think we can do it. I want to say one more thing. I kind of got talking there. People with FASD are out of sync chronologically with their chronologically aged peers every step of the way because their developmental age is below, or their ability to problem solve and understand is below their chronological age every step of the way, even with a high IQ. And so when I'm talking about being out of sync, that's exactly what I mean. It's like they don't understand what their peers and people of their typical intelligence level would understand at each grade level. And so it's really going to take some tweaking of the system, some developing of different pathways of IEP goals to help them be successful, because we're losing most of them. Throughout Alaska, we're losing most of them in middle school. And by tweaking our system, we can keep that from happening. I think, by the way, the same thing is true with our mental health system, our social service system, is that, again, our systems don't understand how to deal with this. And I think that's the next step. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Evanson?
Well, what we know is a person with an FASD without support has a high risk of depression, substance abuse, perpetuating problems, serving time in jail, or becoming homeless, and also suicide. Early diagnosis and support allows families, schools, and communities to work together to address prevention, intervention, and ongoing support. And so I'd like to again thank you for the time and open to questions, please.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Ms. Sanderson, for your testimony. And everyone else's, did we get to everyone?
I think we did.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, I have some questions, but I'll turn. Oh, check with the committee here first. Does anybody have anything right now? Okay, I did have. Let's see. What was my question? Why don't you go ahead, Senator Thomas, and I'll get my act together here. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess it's generally accepted that the earlier that there's diagnosis and intervention, the better the outcome is for the child. That's generally accepted. That's the premise we work on anyhow.
Through the chair, it absolutely is. Being able to diagnose early and understand what the disability really is, because when we diagnose a student right now, we have 14 categories of special education that we can identify a child in. FASD is not one of them. Most often they're found to be other health impaired, but trying to find the right services and connections for those students can be very difficult. Having a correct diagnosis is really helpful in knowing what kind of services to apply for that student and what kinds of supports to put into place to help them be successful early on. And teaching early on gives them the skills that make them more successful later on.
But we're talking there about somebody that's already in school. So the earlier the diagnosis, meaning even shortly after birth or something, would be. And is that possible? What tests are there that cause that to happen, or that should be done almost upon birth of a child to determine that there is a potential, at least?
Through the chair, there are assessments that can be done early on. One of the best ways for us to be able to identify, though, is for a family to disclose that a child's been exposed. And then we can definitely move in the right direction. But there are assessments that can be done. We have infant services. We have our school district provides preschool services 3 through 5 that we can provide additional supports and services for students that are identified. And what happens a lot of times, I think, is students aren't identified right away. They don't get the preschool services, and then that's when kindergarten hits, and that makes it really difficult. A lot of times stepping into kindergarten without having done some preschool activities.
And if I may.
Sure, go ahead.
One of these reports indicated that a relatively significant percentage, 16.2% of urine samples obtained from pregnant women in labor were positive for drugs or alcohol. Is there an issue with that information being passed along, or at least the parents counseled at that point in time, that there's probably a likelihood that there's a potential issue, to make them seek training or discussions or further evaluation to mitigate as best as possible the end results?
Through the chair, I don't think that any of that information would be disclosed to anyone outside of the hospital staff, medical staff, unless a parent agreed to allow that information to be presented to someone else.
Cindy, could I say something?
Please do.
Okay. I can't hear very well, so I'm not quite sure I heard it all. But what I want to say is that going back to the need of our systems to develop the capacity to deal with fetal alcohol, what we have right now is we have parents who may have the medical diagnosis or may not want to get the medical diagnosis of an FASD, which they get from their doctor, you know, that when they don't want to deal with it because they don't think it makes a difference. And they think that if, you know, that it's going to shame them, we still have all that. You know, women don't drink on purpose to harm their babies. There's all these other issues related to that. But because they don't think it makes a difference, they don't want to disclose that information to us. And, of course, we don't diagnose in schools this medical diagnosis. So we're really handicapped as a system when we don't know what the problem is. So when the system can develop the capacity to deal with FASD, and parents understand that if they bring us this information, then we're going to use these different techniques. We're going to take this different pathway, this different kind of support, so that their child can actually, you know, get the help that they need. I always say, when we build it, they will come. And when we have our systems ready to accept it, parents will bring us this information. And I think that issue will go away.
Okay, well, that contributes, but that gets, you know, that's the, that's after the situation has already occurred, I guess. So the idea of what the system can do to do more, I guess, to prevent the situation, I guess, is really what the issue is, right? It's how we treat something. Go ahead.
Yeah, the people most likely at risk in adult life to have children with FASD are people with unidentified FASD themselves, because they're at such high risk for all the risky behaviors and, you know, failure in adult life. So by helping the people that already have it, that's our best step towards prevention, along with educating everyone else, of course, every step of the way.
Okay, thank you.
Did you have something to add?
Jean Gerhardt, Cyrus. Deb took the words out of my mouth. One of the things I wanted to say is I often say, without intervention, we have no prevention. We have a lot of people in school and in society right now who are failing, and the people who are not continuing their education are more likely to become parents at a younger age and to be using substances to cope with the chronic frustration. And so by providing those supports, and one thing I wanted to add is that those supports, once things are working well, we do not pull those supports. We should not have to, right now we're having to kind of fight to maintain the supports that my daughter has, to maintain that success. You cannot pull those supports. This is a lifelong disability. So those supports need to continue throughout education and then on to into adulthood as well. But, yes, we need to have the interventions for prevention. We are making progress in prevention through education, but we need to support those currently impacted. Thank you.
And the toughest time for people living with this disability is not the school years. It's adult life. And we have to, again, a reason for changing how our system works to provide support for what the things they're going to face in adult life is that that's where we're really losing them. Adult life is where they're really failing. We have a high rate of suicide. I could tell you horror stories that would last the rest of the day. We have to change this around, and our school system is the place to start.
If I could, I'd like to follow up on that because I understand as adults it's got to be difficult, but as a child it has to be extremely difficult because, unfortunately, kids are hard on each other, especially in junior high. It just seems so intense that, you know, kids are always picking on other kids, especially if they're a little bit different. And I've often thought that, you know, kids with FASD typically have an IEP or in special ed, and so they get pulled out of the classroom to get extra help. So that kind of makes them stand out different from other kids to start with, which then I think just adds to the problem of them being a little bit different and probably being picked on by other kids. So how do we deal with that? I mean, I know you have to take them out of the classroom to get them extra help, but they have to know when they're pulled out of the classroom that they're different.
I'm going to let Monica speak to that.
Okay. Whoever. I know that's a loaded question.
Well, that's an excellent point. There are some children with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder who do get what we call pull-out services from the regular education environment. But those services can be delivered within the classroom in an unintrusive way that are delivered specifically for that child but also help the rest of their peers. So it depends on each child and depending on where their deficits are. Say if they are far below in reading than their same age peers, then they may get some pull-out services specifically for reading. But They can definitely receive all the services in the regular ed environment with the right supports, with teachers that are trained and understand fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and that every child learns at a different rate and may behave differently, with training the paraprofessionals that work with them, with training the site administrators to read the signs and the behaviors that the kids have, and training every teacher and every adult that works around that child. So molding the environment around the child rather than having to segregate them even further by pulling them out every single time is not going to be the answer.
Okay. Obviously it takes a very talented teacher, because if you've got a classroom in elementary of 25, 26 kids, and each one learns differently, it's going to be a challenge for the teachers. And have the most respect for teachers, believe me. And I think, Mindy, you mentioned that you didn't know that you were impacted by FAS until you were 21.
Yes, that's correct.
Do you think having known this as a junior high or even elementary would have been beneficial to you, or wouldn't have mattered at all?
It would have been beneficial because I knew that there was something else going on. Yes, I have learning disabilities. However, the conflict in my life and the inability to understand direction and to learn how to read, for instance, I had all the steps, but my brain was not able to process those steps. And if I would have had the correct support, perhaps, you know, I would have learned before the age 12 how to read more than three or four sentences. And also going back to adults with FASD, in my adult life, it causes me many problems because I present well. I'm good at speaking. I'm good with people. However, when it comes down to job skills, unless they are laid out and explained to me each step of the way, I don't understand fully what my job is. And because of this, I have been fired from a lot of jobs, actually, because I'm asking for assistance and it becomes too much for my employer. And like I said, I ask a lot of questions, and that's frustrating. And the other thing that I found is if I disclose that I have a disability on my application, on my work application, many times I won't get a call back at all. So it's kind of a catch-22 for me. Do I disclose? Am I honest about my disability and potentially not get the job that I desire? Or do I keep it to myself and then try to make up for it in other ways or ask a lot of questions to my employer, which causes a lot of problems? Also, I wanted to say, as an adult, in relationships, just common relationships with people, my disability is noticeable, and it's not something that goes away. And mostly it's in a one-on-one capacity that I struggle with communication and just knowing the boundaries of that relationship. It took me a long time to understand that people have personal space and you don't touch them unless you're invited. And simple things like that, simple skills like that had to be pointed out to me and again and again and again, okay, that's not an appropriate behavior. Like, normally this is how people behave. So,
okay, very good. How is someone diagnosed with being impacted by FASD? Is it a medical doctor? Is it a psychologist? Or?
Deb, would you answer that?
Yeah, it's a medical diagnosis. They take it done by a doctor who's been trained in how to do it. It's often missed if they don't ask the right questions, but it's a medical diagnosis. It's looking at specific facial and physical characteristics that you can measure areas of the face, et cetera, that's very specific and normed for different races. It's a history of learning problems, alcohol use, and then physical evaluation. It's very specific. It's very precise. And it's very sound based, scientifically sound.
Do we have these doctors in?
Yeah, we know how to diagnose it, and we know what they need. We just don't know how to do it as a system.
Are these doctors available in Alaska?
In Alaska, we have sorry, Deb, I didn't mean to jump in.
Diagnostic
teams,
okay,
which are comprised of a parent navigator, medical doctor, psychologist, speech. Each team makes up who's available, basically, in that region. We did have some teams in the rural areas, North Slope, Northwest Arctic, Bering Straits, have no diagnostic teams right now. It's something that our partnership is looking at. And just to clarify, fetal alcohol syndrome is a medical diagnosis. The other diagnoses also come under the umbrella of fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, but they are, the fetal alcohol syndrome is the syndrome, the medical diagnosis, but that is the lower number of people who are impacted. I also wanted to, there are a lot of other diagnoses, alcohol-related neurological
disorders. And they all involve the brain working differently, and it's permanent. So they all involve the brain.
Right. And
so it's all about the brain.
One thing I wanted to say again also, that it's not, school success is not always about academic functioning, because even though FASD or prenatal exposure is the greatest cause of mental retardation in our state, the majority of people with prenatal exposure do not experience mental retardation or cognitive impairment. But what happens is, because, as Mindy was saying, you can have all the pieces, but there may be processing issues that help you utilize the skills and the abilities that you do have. And also, behavior is very often what brings our kids to light in a classroom. It's the behaviors. Behavior is communication, and if it's not recognized as something's not working for this child, we need to focus on it, then their anxiety increases and the responses increase, and as we get more anxious, our resources and ability to function decrease. My daughter has a one-on-one aide in the classroom, and they are a buffer for her, and they also help her recognize when, and they can pick up on when things aren't working. So it's the ability to diminish the anxiety by providing the supports, and also to teach very specifically those necessary skills in the classroom, on the job, and in relationships. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Senator Stevens.
I guess my question would be, so what do you want the legislature to do? you know, it's just a matter of giving more money to the schools and solve the problem once it exists. Or are there things that the legislature can do in prevention? As you said, this is the one issue that is preventable. And you as a teacher and as a special ed person, there are so many issues that you deal with that are not preventable. But this is one that is preventable. And what can we do as a legislature to help educate children before they become parents? I guess the question is, you have a big problem, and we have a big problem, a big societal problem. And I really appreciate what you have said. My heart goes out to you as a parent. But what do we do about it?
Through the chair, first I will say, if you look in your packets, there are some priorities for the FASD partnership. And with those priorities are, again, assisting families who have children who are FASD, have FASD, and the ability to maintain the family unit is really critical. The other one is early intervention services and supports, testing, assessment. Is another one of our priorities. And I can let Monica speak a little bit more to those.
Well, where to start, alcohol is such a great problem in our great state of Alaska. And there are so many agencies and organizations that are affected by it. Every healthcare system, every system, as Deb mentioned earlier, but if we start at one place, if we could start with interventions with the birth mothers, that would be an excellent place. If we could help them to not have any more children, like in Mary's case, have any more children who were prenatally exposed to alcohol, that is a start. She has become educated. She is aware. She is an advocate now for her child. her child is receiving support in the school system and in the community, and she is already planning what kind of supports he's going to need outside of the school system. So that is an excellent example of where we could start with the birth mothers, providing intervention after the birth of one child, being able to have that support after that child is born and in school. You know, support doesn't just happen for the birth mother while they're in the hospital. They need that continued support with their families and in their communities to remain sober and to have a healthy family lifestyle. And then also be educated and provide awareness and become an advocate for their children. So that would be an excellent place. Another really good support that you guys can give us for our teachers is one example that came up yesterday from another legislature was possibly having teachers, when they get their renew their certification every three to five years, having a mandatory class on fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and having that as a continuing education unit, is that what they're called. That would be an excellent resource for the state of Alaska. For our teachers that are coming in, rather than just having the one-hour training for our new teachers in the school districts. So those are good places to start. And then also supporting in every district or pushing for having a teacher that's there year-round to provide training for every teacher and all the staff, not all the teachers, but all the staff members that work around that child. To have healthy lifestyles within the community is a great, great start. So pick your place. And remember.
Start anywhere and go from there, huh? This is Deb. Can I say one more thing, please? I don't want to be interruptive because I can't see y'all.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've spent a lot of time working in Canada, too, and I spent a year running a program for adults with FASD from the ages of 19 to our oldest client was 57, living with FASD. And we had 55 adults, and it was an incredible year and made me realize how much I wanted to come back here and help the school system really understand FASD and where we're going. And I had an experience there that we had a client named Dwayne who was being used in horrible ways by the crack dealers in Whitehorse. And his story made headlines, and it was a big news story. And I was having dinner with some teachers from the Department of Education in Whitehorse that I'd worked with through the years, and someone mentioned that story. It was a very public story. And I said, yes, Dwayne, and answered some questions about the story. And then this resource teacher said, with tears in her eyes, wait a minute, are you talking about Dwayne? And she said his last name. Are you talking about him? Dwayne from Burwash? And I said, yeah, that's him. She says, Dwayne's been living on the streets? I said, he's been on the streets for 5 years. And she burst into tears. And she said, he was my prize resource student. Do you know he plays the guitar? Do you know he can do this? And, I mean, she just broke down, and it was just heart-wrenching. And in that moment, I realized we had to get our system to understand adult life for people with FASD. Because she'd worked really hard, as had other good teachers. They hadn't really understood his diagnosis because he didn't get it till he was an adult. He learned all these skills, none of which were really able to translate to his real adult life problems as an adult, and he's spent his years since graduating from high school on the streets. And I can tell you story after story after story of young adults throughout Alaska that the same thing has happened. We can do better with just a little tweaking and a little support in our school systems. We can do better. We can increase community capacity to deal with fetal alcohol and improve outcomes for our citizens. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Deb. Did you have something to add?
Mary? I'd like to add, I had a stepson that had similar problems like Mindy. And he was the only one that understood Terrell. He told me and his dad one time, you know, we don't know what they go through. Even though we went to trainings and stuff like this, we don't know. And that is true. We don't know what they go through, how they feel. And after he didn't finish high school, he ended up dropping out of high school. No matter how much we tried helping, he held how many jobs, he couldn't hold jobs to. And through the poor choices that he made, his life ended at a very young age, at 20. He would have been 21 by now. So it's important that you look at the things that these ladies are asking for the education. Early intervention really helps. It helped my son. And I could see the difference between him and my stepson. Thank you.
Oh, very good. Thank you. Okay, any other questions from the committee members? Again, we'll see y'all at lunch at 12 o'clock. I do appreciate you educating us on FSD and the challenges in educating these children. And I know it's very challenging for the teachers and the school systems and obviously for the students themselves who suffer from this. And I wish that they were able to better communicate to us what their needs were and how we could help them. And I understand that's difficult for them to communicate as well. Now, I do one just quick question. In Anchorage, I think I'm told the Slingerland program works really good for kids that are impacted by FSD, which is my understanding is only taught at the Baxter Elementary School, and there's a huge wait list. Is there anything we can, I'm sure just more money, right, would help, but is there anything we can do, and is that one tool that does help kids learn how to read?
It is one tool that helps kids learn how to read. We also, in special education, have purchased the language program, language with an exclamation point, and it is one, from the Florida Research, it is one of the top reading programs across the nation for special education or as an intervention program, and we utilize it in all of our middle schools and moving it into high schools for reading education. So we do have multiple options for teaching. We have TransMath, and so we are really looking at research-based curriculum that supports students in being successful in all subject areas.
Great. Well, thank you. And thank you for continuing to try to look for the best tool to help our kids. And I do know some of the committee members need to go off to some of the committee meetings, so we are going to adjourn here. But I wanted to remind the committee our next meeting is Friday at 9 o'clock, and we'll be hearing from the State Board of Education and Early Development. This will be a joint meeting with the House, so it'll be in the Ramona Barnes Committee Room 124, again at 8 o'clock. So if there's nothing else, come before the committee. And again, thank you, everyone, for joining us today, and I know you were practicing your presentations last night, and you all did beautiful because most of you are working off of notes, which is it's always difficult. And then sitting in front of us here, us guys with the suits on, is very intimidating. So you all did really well. Thank you so much. With that, we're adjourned.